asked for John Jones, the manhunter from Mars, his world, and the vile menagerie of villains he must confront.
DC Comics proudly presents The Martian Manhunter in Alone. Rob Williams, writer. Eddie Barrows, pencils. Ibir Ferreira, inks. Gabe Altabe, colorist. Tom Napolitano, letterer. Eric Canetta, cover. Brian Cunningham, group editor. Harvey Richards, associate editor. Andy Corey, editor. Martian Manhunter created by Joseph Samichson and Joe Serta.
Flashback. FBI agent Darryl Wessel, sitting on the steps of the Capitol building in Washington, D.C. People watching, looking for someone to save, or someone to save you. While enjoying a strong coffee, he realized the Martians are among us.
Dear God, they want us to be afraid of each other. They want us to do their work for them and rip each other apart. Human beings are good at that.
The Indian Ocean. The shipping vessel the Pearl has taken refuge on is attacked by pirates. The crew had been good to the Pearl, but now they were all going to die. The Pearl tries to hide, but very quickly, the pirates draw down on her with their automatic weapons. However, the Pearl continues her telepathic communion with the Martian Manhunter, who explains that the Pearl is no human girl, and these pirates are not what they appear to be.
You are far more than you ever imagined, Pearl. You are not the victim they would have you be. You can be a weapon. If that is what you want.
Hell yes.
The Pearl begins demonstrating martial arts moves on the white Martians, but their shape-shifting abilities show how ineffective a physical attack would be. However,
would you like to telekinetically make their internal systems explode?
Yes, please.
She blows off their heads instead.
I don't know how I did that. I don't know what I did.
The white Martians survive and begin to reform.
You say because you're not real human. As such, we could scrape you off the walls of this room and still return to him with our prize.
Martian grenade! Martian grenade!
There's an explosion, and the Pearl passes immaterially through the hull of the ship and onto the darkness of the stormy seas. Back to Washington, D.C., and the present. Mr. Biscuits practices his martial arts on top of a speeding ambulance during a rainstorm.
Sorry, bit busy at the mole. Yes, come and have a go if you believe your biscuit mix texture to be robust enough. Begin all the combats!
Alicia, his 10-year-old keeper, tries to call him back in.
Martian Maneater is coming, following us. They want the last cookie in the pack, Alicia, and I will not allow it. Plus, there's the whole wiping out the human race thing, too, which I'm also not overly keen on.
Agent Wessel is sweating bullets, still freaked out over the revelation that he is not, in fact, a human being, that his past is not his own, and that he is, in fact, a fragmented portion of the Martian Manhunter. Leo Chandler, the paraplegic youth that appears to embody John Jones's cold intellect, coaches Agent Wessel to look beyond limited human terms. Atop the ambulance, Mr. Biscuits attempts to confront the Martian Man-Eater.
Karate! Hiya! My arm fell off. I like that arm. Where was I? And now I am on Mars, apparently. Okay, my arm has fallen off, and I am on the surface of Mars. So what Tuesday, then? Phobos, Martian mood, big mouth on one side, mental note to self, possible future arch enemy, could eat an enormous amount of biscuits if it grew arms and legs and became sentient, which is unlikely. Ah, right, now I understand. This is a Martian psychic attack to distract me from the fact that the Maneater has just landed on top of the ambulance right in front of me.
Swoosh!
Ah, phew, thank goodness. This is all just a psychic dream.
In fact, the Martian Manhunter had just chopped Mr. Biscuits in half.
Not a dream, then. That's disappointing.
Agent Wessel has Alicia take the wheel as he tries shooting a plain standard-issue gun at the Martian Maneater. The remaining pieces of Mr. Biscuits have found their way inside the ambulance, and he notices that he can't make psychic contact with Leo Chandler, a curious development. Dura Wessel is skewered in the chest by the Martian Maneater and briefly believes that he has died. Wessel thinks of the little girl Alicia and how she's doomed to die if he can't pull himself together.
I simply phase off the Maneater's sword.
Wessel begins to telekinetically control the ambulance. Then he plays around with the density of the Maneater and eventually manages to sling it off their vehicle.
And then once we're free, I just reach inside the Maneater with my mind, and I show it for what it really is.
The individual white Martians that had formed the Maneater reemerge as the Maneater gestalt dissipates. Darryl climbs back into the ambulance and takes the wheel from Alicia.
You saved us. Thank you.
You're welcome.
There's no need to look so sad. You're still alive.
No, I'm not.
In the Indian Ocean, the Pearl is saved by a whale, which is being ridden by Aquaman. Finally, cut to some amateur astronomers who are checking out Mars with their telescope. They point out that the moon of Mars, Phobos, translates into fear and panic, and the moon Deimos means terror or dread. They feel all the above when they realize that the actual moon of Phobos has begun moving towards the Earth, fangs appearing in its so-called open mouth. My enjoyment of the Martian Manhunter series was on an upward trajectory from issues 1 through 3. 4 is the first instance where I have a bit of a dip. the revelations of issue 3 that all these characters that were taking up the book in place of Martian Manhunter were in fact aspects of the Manhunter made me excited for the series and where it could go with this conceit. Issue 4 is still entertaining, but I'm running into the same problem I did before. There still isn't any Martian Manhunter in this book called Martian Manhunter, and instead it's basically a team book. So when you spend more time developing Darrow Wessel, and when the Pearl begins having a hero's journey, my mind is going, these aren't real characters. These are characters that are going to all merge back into the Martian Manhunter Voltron style. That's the guy I'm buying the book for. And it worries me too, if the writer's spending this much time continuing to develop the characters once we know that they're just aspects of John Jones, it makes me wonder if it's not going to be a Captain Planet situation where we're going to follow these false aspects as opposed to the character that I signed up for. I'm also starting to run out of patience with the breakout character of the strip, Mr. Biscuits, because all he ever talks about are cookies. And I like the meta commentary of that, which is that so many creators who've written Martian Manhunter in the last 20, 30 years have fixated on those frickin' cookies. I like the Oreo Choco thing. It's cute. I don't mind when it comes up every now and again. But they've basically taken a superhero and made his defining characteristic that he likes frickin' cookies. You know what? Wolverine likes beer, but not every story has to be about Wolverine drinking a beer. And so while I think that the point of Mr. Biscuits is to rub that in people's faces, at the same time, the point's been made, it's getting played out, let's get this guy off the stage. Also, while there's some really strong thriller aspects of this issue, some good action sequences, it still feels like the story is going in circles because now that we know who all these disparate characters are and what they're supposed to be doing, we've already got most of these characters together in Washington, D.C. So the flash over to the Pearl and spend a bunch of time with her off in the distance. I appreciate that she's trying to get together with the rest of the guys, but I don't know that I really need to spend all this time with the character working her way from across the world to Washington, D.C. The art is still spectacular, though. I especially like the Pearl sequences and also the moment when Mr. Biscuits and the Martian Manhunter fight on the psychic plane. That one page looks like something from a late 70s, early 80s issue of Heavy Metal magazine, with variants in rendering technique and muted colors. It's pretty cool. I want to add that I have a pet peeve, especially with regards to the Martian Manhunter. I hate it when comic books that aren't the X-Men use the term phase to mean to go intangible. Chris Claremont popularized that term in specific relation to Kitty Pryde when she would pass through objects. She phased. She used phasing. It's not a real frickin' word. It was something from a comic book, and it's not a Martian Manhunter comic book. When you want to become intangible, when you want to pass through an object, don't use the term phase unless you're writing an X-Men comic. Ah, I hate that. And here's another matter I'd like to direct to the three freaking credited editors in this comic book. You know that comics have become too much of a bureaucracy when you have to list three freaking editors. The first issue of Martian Manhunter was promoted with an image by Andre Sorrentino. That image wasn't used, and instead a piece by Dan Panosian served as the main cover for Martian Manhunter number 1 with a variant cover by Eric Canetta. The second issue had two covers. The main cover was by interior artist Eddie Barrows, and the variant cover was by Eric Canetta. The third issue featured a main cover drawn by interior artist Eddie Barrows and a variant cover by Eric Canetta. The fourth issue was solicited to have a cover by Dan Panosian, artist of the first issue's cover, and instead it ships with a cover by Eric Canetta in the style of all of the variant covers, which is a single figure, usually a three-quarter figure, against a white background. That was okay for the variant covers. As the main cover, it's awful. It doesn't reflect the contents of the story. Many of these variant covers have featured characters that either have not appeared in the comic yet or have not appeared extensively, and they have very low eye appeal. It's not particularly well drawn. It looks like a design from a video game. All that negative space is wasted. Dan Panosian did a really nice cover featuring Mr. Biscuits and the Pearl, with all this green energy emanating around them, and they're standing on the Martian Manhunter symbol. It was a very nice cover. The Eric Canetta cover is boring, and if I saw it on a newsstand, I would not pick it up to see the contents. The fifth issue also was solicited with a cover by Dan Panosian, which you can find online. It's really nice. It's done in a cool retro 60s style, and you can see it blown up big. It looks like it's painted. It's got brush strokes all over it that gives it this really nice texture. Unfortunately, the actual comic shipped with another terrible Eric Canetta cover. At least there's some vague gray color swashes in the background this time instead of being plain white. The cover introduces a new character who does not seem particularly appealing to me. For some reason, he kind of looks like Death's Head. Stop using the awful Eric Canetta covers, for frig's sake, please. Keep the Dan Panosian covers. They're very nice. I've had issue number 4 sitting on a table waiting for me to do a review for it until I got issue number 5, and I'm just already sick of looking at this cover just from this month of having it staring at me. It's hideous. Stop doing these covers. Now I want to take a look at the sales on the book. With issue number 4, Martian Manhunter dropped in rank from 114 to 108 and shed 2,800 readers. Now, at first, that was a bit of a gut punch because I thought, man, that's a lot of people to lose for a book that really doesn't have that large of a sales numbers to begin with. Martian Manhunter drops below the 20,000 copy barrier. They used to signal the point of cancellation for a title. It sold 19,738 copies of number 4. However, I'm not sure where that line is drawn at DC Comics anymore. Comic sales have gotten so bad that I think that you have to get closer to 15,000 for that to be an issue. And also, what I thought was a pretty precipitous drop in sales compared to other DC titles really isn't that bad. You look at Justice League United, which was recently canceled. That dropped 4,200 copies in 1 month. Sinestro shed 3,400 readers. Catwoman, 4,950. Constantine, 2,066. Red Hood and Arsenal dropped 1,700 copies. Justice League 3001 lost 2,200 readers. Dr. Fate, 2,700 readers. Looking at books in a comparable place to the Martian Manhunter in the top 300, only Black Canary actually gained readers to the tune of 400, probably due to guest artist Pia Guerra, best known for her work on Why the Last Man. And Martian Manhunter was part of a big initiative called the DCU, Y-O-U. The winners of that initiative are clearly Robin, Son of Batman, and Starfire, both of which are currently selling greater than 30,000 copies a month and are in the top 60. More middling are Earth 2 Society, Green Lantern Lost Army, which has already been canceled, and We Are Robin. That's closer to the terrain that the Martian Manhunter exists in. And there are other high-profile books that are already near or below that 15,000 copy mark. Bizarro, Midnighter, Batmite. So as of right now, the Martian Manhunter book is doing okay. It's performing reasonably well compared to other DC titles. But unfortunately, the DC Comics line seems to be dropping in a pretty rapid fashion. And I find that worrisome. I've heard a lot about DC's problems of late. How the DCU initiative did not work out well for them. How Convergence was not well received. I'm constantly seeing those books, and the Futures End tie-in books are on liquidation. The entire line seems to be taking a bit of a nosedive. Martian Manhunter may be in a better position than other books in the DC line, but there really aren't any good seats on the Hindenburg.
Your ego betrays you. Will you not listen to reason? This won't end well for you.
We received retweets and favorites from Ange, Charlton Hero, Count Druncula, Danilo Santiago, Darren and Ruth Sutherland, Dr. G Nerdologist, Ed Moore at Teal Productions, Eternal Rage, Fantastiverse, It's Plastic Man, Jacob Edwards, Cord Industries, Luke Dobb, Martin Gray, The Odyssey Unleashed Podcast, Oscar Blue Devil, Randy Caldwell, Scott Bachman, Senate Alias Scarecrow, and Trekker Talk. We also got retweets from Between the Pages, DCU Movie Page, Dead as Hell, Firestorm Fan, Flotospan, Guano Man, Keith G. Baker, Ryan C. at Trash Film Guru, Siskoid, The Ultraverse Network, and Zach Calvert, as well as favorites from Adam Blackmoon, Anthony Durso, Comic Blitz, David Golding Artist, Ed Moore at Indie Comics Fan, Eli Adiel Perrin, Inigo Montoya, Glenn Walker, Joseph Crawford, Kyle Pettit, Lance Scheibe, Longbox Graveyard, Mark Sweeney, Paul Moore, Rob Williams, Sean McLaughlin, and Stephen Perry. Count Druncula wrote, "Mars is so demanding of our requests for retweets. I recently appeared with Count Druncula on the Secret Origins Podcast, episode 21, Jonah Hex and Black Condor. You can find that at secretoriginspodcast.wordpress.com. Siskoid wrote episode 13, "I'm super late on all my favorite podcasts, but I was just listening to this one. It was good, as usual." Siskoid wrote a 14, "Still catching up. I can't believe people would discount American Secrets, as it is my go-to book when people ask me what a good Martian Manhunter series, comic or TV, should be like." Andrew wrote episode 16, "Great review of the last Martian Manhunter issue on the podcast." And he tweeted of Martian Manhunter number 5, "Interesting Aquaman and John moment. Like this book a lot." Finally, watched the Supergirl television show pilot last week. I'm still wondering if the commander is going to turn out to be Blanks. But also of interest, there's a point when Kara Zor-El is captured by the Department of Extra-Normal Operations, and she sees a view screen of inmates from the Kryptonian prison Fort Roz, one of whom I thought might be Jim, Son of Saturn. Joseph Crawford thought maybe it's a reworked Despero instead. Either way, woohoo! One way or another, we're going to get some Martian Manhunter in that Supergirl series, and I'm looking forward to that. The pilot was fun, by the way. I thought it was a little overstuffed. It didn't really have enough time for a lot of important beats to be given emotional resonance. But overall, I like it. It was a cute show. I was surprised by the intensity of the action, quality superhero special effects for a TV budget, and the Supergirl costume is really excellent. I still have some issues with the dark hose and the knee-high boots, but I understand practically why that is in place. Supergirl has to do some pretty heavy-duty fighting in that first episode. I'm sure that she's going to be doing more of that type of action. Under the circumstances, she's going to need some bodily protection. She's an actress, not an actual Kryptonian. And I just really love the texture of the blue portions of the outfit. I like the little thumb loop, which again makes sense for somebody who's going to be in combat the way that the Supergirl is. And the red piping is very nice. So it's just a good looking suit. Looks great in action. Solid performances. They just need to get a little bit more Martian in there.
Podcast listeners should feel free to leave a comment on one of our blogs, either the Umbrella Rolled Spine Podcasts or the specific Idle Head of Diablo blog. Both are available quite easily through Google searches. You can also shoot me a tweet at Commander Blanks. That's B-L-A-N-X. Thank you for listening.